Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, on this hot summer day in September. It's 95 degrees out. Crazy warm. Beautiful. For a couple weeks there, it was getting really chilly. We're like, damn, summer's over. Today, we are going to talk about interdimensional life. And for me, what's really interesting about the subject is as much as the, you know, we study UFOs and aliens and all that stuff, and just my personal experience, maybe you guys have had a lot better experience, but I have not had a single concentrated conversation about what it means to have truly interdimensional life from an organic perspective of this simply happens to a very intentional invention era of one dimension pushing into another dimension. Let's clarify real quick what I mean by dimensions. Mathematicians parse the universe into various categories of trackable metrics, meaning, you know, I am in a three-dimensional coordinate system. I'm in an X, I'm in a Y, and I'm a Z. And that was all we had for quite a while. And then we had T, which was time. Then we got general relativity, special relativity. Then it got really abstract with quantum physics. You weren't supposed to be able to know all these things at once. It was either where you were or how fast you were moving, but you couldn't know both, you know, the uncertainty principle. But what ends up happening is these mathematicians have got nothing to really prove in the universe besides equations on paper, which I would say is sort of a mathematical philosophy of life. Let's see what we can do on paper, and then let's test the hypothesis in equipment like CERN and other things, right? I have to be careful because I don't trust them at all, just so you know. So dimensions are really, at most, us all existing in the same place, but we're simply vibrating in a frequency outside of each other. Most of you have that same definition, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page before we really talk about it. So in order to actually penetrate another dimension and travel back or forth or whatever, it's merely taking the frequency, I say merely with a huge asterisk by it, we're going to discuss this, taking the frequency of an object, a person, a living being, and changing every single vibration to have a mean vibration that is more congruent with the mean vibration that, say, our eyes and bodies recognize, right? It's getting really abstract very quickly, but we're going to pierce through everything because it's extremely interesting. I don't know how important this conversation is, but who knows? One of you guys could take it to the next level. And guys, I mean, you know, girls too. Hopefully guys is a generic reference for most of you. We have a lot of preconceived notions that we don't think of very much, which I'm a little, I'm not concerned about it, but I think it's important to point out. So I can touch my two fingers together, my thumb and my middle finger together when I crunch my hand. You could touch objects in our particular dimension. The reason why that's possible is that the frequencies of the two objects attempting to touch each other are vibrating at the exact same average mean as each other. That's how they're able to collide. Because if anyone were to take the measurement of a photon, you know, some bar of some little thing of light, right? Little stream of light. In addition, and I mentioned photons because they tend to be the smallest energy packet that we can get our hands on. And according to folks that built the Coral Castle and a few others, it is the smallest form of energy. It is the primitive packet of energy that we're all actually trying to look for. But everything from that point up is a superset of the subset. Everything's vibrating. But it has no mass, if you really think about it. How could a packet of energy really resist another packet of energy completely by itself? The answer is it really can't by itself. The entire, you know, foundational explanation of the universe as dictated by Faraday to Tesla, rediscovered by Eric Dollard, is that there's an ether in the universe. Maybe it's not quite the characteristic of what the few experiments have said. But it's this collision ecosystem in the universe about how things bounce off, how ether bounces off things, ether being probably the most fundamental packet in the universe. Light merely being a reaction, a chain reaction in the fabric of this ether. We perceive it to be something that exists, but it's really a verb, not a noun. See the first episode back in season one. But the reason why things collide is that when all of these subset systems collide, we get what is, for the lack of a better term, a force field. Your dielectric and magnetism waves creating electromagnetism waves around mass, and those create resistance patterns, things bouncing off each other. Perhaps a void. You know, have you ever been in a bed and someone really heavy gets next to you? Maybe when you were a kid, your parent jumped in the bed, or your big brother or sister jumps in the bed, and you go, you know, leaning towards them. That's sort of the invisible patterns of the universe, of our existence. There's a bunch of that going on. Gravity wells. And I'm sure there's transverse repulsive wells, as waves as well, you know. The reason why I mention that is because we have to sort of have just the most basic definition of why we're in this dimension and why someone else, or how someone else could be in the other dimension. Are they really in a different physical place? No more than you and I are in a different place. We're still in this existence. We're still in the simulator, if you can hear my voice. I'm unaware of aliens stealing, you know, my stuff. I also think that it injures the conversation when anyone talks to me about dimensions of existence, interdimensionality, and they really perceive in their mind a completely different universe. They perceive perhaps universes that are made of completely different things. I sound like William Shatner. There may be that dimension, right? We always talk about on this show the mortal coil and the spirit. Well, in the spirit realm of things, quite frankly, there might be a whole nother medium by which that exists, but we're not going to talk about that right now. We're talking about the mass energy model that we're currently using to hear each other. So like I said, there's going to be organic models and there's going to be intentional models. What would be an organic model of interdimensionality? Well, it would be something along these lines. This is just an example. There's no limitations to this idea. But imagine as a freak of nature, in another dimension, there is a second moon to planet Earth. It's not vibrating in our frequency, so we can't see it. And because it's not vibrating in our frequency, there is absolutely no effect of it on us. There's no gravitational force. There's no light reflecting off its surface coming down to Earth. And obviously, we have no idea that exists. Imagine through some massive freak of nature, a bunch of coincidences in the universe. This is super duper far-fetched, but this will give you the idea. All the mass on that second moon shifts in its vibration. It experiences something else. Could be. Just as a weird example. And I'm not sure you could actually shift mass all at once into a different frequency. You know, you might get like the surface to switch, but not the interior. So you'd have like part of the moon changing dimensions. Again, we don't see this. So I think the universe is actually pretty damn stable. But I wanted to talk about this just in case some of you have evidence to the contrary. But let's say in that universe, something hits the Earth really hard, creates a massive explosion. That explosion carries a series of waves at this second moon. It hits that moon so unified and so perfect. Maybe it creates a bubble of disturbing force that takes the whole moon and encapsulates it in a bubble and sends it to a different vibrational frequency. And all of a sudden, you and I, wherever we are in the world, we're looking up at the moon, holding someone's hand, and boom, there's a different moon added to the the previous moon. And depending on its velocity, depending on its positioning, perhaps the other place has our moon as well, so it's all nice and synced up. But what if the elliptical orbits are different and they're going to hit each other? Who knows, right? But we see this additional moon, and we get the additional gravity. We get the additional light. Hell, maybe it's a lot closer than the other moon. By the way, I've debated creating a whole episode on our moon, just so people understand how special it is, even if it's a round ball or a heliocentric-based universe. That's probably the biggest evidence there's a God up there ever. Maybe I'll bumper this episode with it, because I don't think I can go a whole hour on the moon. But you see what I'm saying? Something occurs in one of our universes, and we can actually move mass between universes simply because it changes frequency. Now, let's talk about frequencies for 1 second so that we can understand the mass of what we're talking about. I gotta be careful. The magnitude. That's what I meant to say. The magnitude of what we're talking about. Well, most of you know that you can go to a number set. You look at your FM radio and you can tune into a bunch of channels. But it seems like it's finite, right? It seems like there's 88 whatever on the bottom and there's 107 at the top or whatever. But now, have you ever thought about the fact that every number is divisible infinitely? There's an infinite number set. Doesn't that just blow your mind? If any of you doubt the existence of some sort of supreme consciousness, just think about the fact that numbers go up, number goes down, and numbers are divisible, and they're exponential. And all waves of positive, negative, that really exists, man. And that's the fabric and the limitation of dimension. We talk about vibration allowing us to exist in this realm versus another realm, meaning there is no limitation. So, before we really get down this path too much, I want you to understand that there could be infinite dimensions. Just as soon as you can recognize that mass needs vibration to collide, to acknowledge other mass, and therefore create life, whether it be a divine schematic coming down, that's sort of irrelevant. This universe is infinite. Now again, we don't see things. We don't see things, pop into existence, right? I've never sat on this patio and all of a sudden there's another being in front of me. There's not an extra chair, We do believe, I don't want to digress and interrupt the integrity of this episode by reaching into other subject matters, but I would say that there's this thing called the Mandela Effect, which, there's a group of us that feel very adamant about certain facts of the universe, and then there's a group of us that think that it's just a bunch of glorified mistakes that people made. People misunderstood things. Perhaps the news reported something wrong. Instead of having the wherewithal to retract the report, they simply, make it disappear. And then it looks like reality changed, but it didn't. Now, James Earl Jones, who played the voice of Darth Vader, a couple of the big ones are, Luke, I'm your father. He's in interviews in our realm for at least an hour of a composited interviews where he has never said, no, I'm your father. He's never, ever said, no, I'm your father in an interview. It's always, Luke, I'm your father. And he's the man that spoke the line. He was the, other than Lucas and the producers who knew that line was in the script, he's the first pedestrian outside of the top brass of that film to know that line. And supposedly he got it wrong. Like, he doesn't remember the line. But he took interviews right after Empire Strikes Back in 1980. And so it wasn't like he was an old man suffering from dementia. A little bit weird. Anne Rice, interview with a vampire versus interview with the vampire. Someone cut a 1-hour clip together with not only her, but everyone involved with the film, from the actors to the producers to other people on the crew who remember it as interview with a vampire. She said in one interview, when I wrote interview with a vampire, blah, blah, blah. But it's now interview with the vampire. So those are a couple pieces. You would think Anne Rice would know what she called her own book, especially since that launched her career. So when I talk about organic interdimensional changes, that one's extremely complex if it were to be related to an interdimensional quality to the universe, because the person, place or thing, let's put it that way, and the central consciousness of humanity is all switching in some gigantic group. You know, there's a group that sees it the way it is today, and there's a group that remembers it from a different dimension. And it really isn't a big deal as long as man isn't causing this and we don't have the ability to veto or approve of these things, right? See CERN. I did make an episode on CERN, just in case, on the season one. But other organic changes, you know, when we say organic, it's usually life. It's usually like a tree. It's a plant. You know, it could be that, you know, the smaller the mass, the more interdimensional it can become. Have you ever, and again, we don't know how each other see darkness. If you're like me, when you're in a dark room and you open your eyes, you see pretty much this kind of swimmy pixelation of almost blacks and blacks. Every once in a while, you get little, like a lightning storm pop in your eyeball here and there. Every once in a while, when I lay my head down to rest, I will get sort of like a tiny off in the peripheral vision of my eye. My eyes are closed. I'll get this pop of light, like someone turned the light on in the room. It's really interesting. It's only a couple seconds. But the more I become attuned to this chatter of, you know, I assume it's the chemicals in my eyeballs. I assume it's the electricity in my brain that can't settle down that's creating this illusion. But what if my eyes were actually crystal clear and perfect, and what I'm seeing is sort of the interdimensional flipping of tiny, tiny parts of mass and energy kind of flipping back and forth? I don't think that's the case, because if it were, I would think that we would get flashes of light and a bunch of other weird stuff all throughout the day. So the reason why I go through the organic example, outside of perhaps the Mandela effect, and we'll loop back to CERN, because I want to get into aliens here and other species real quick and sort of go through what it would mean to be them and to actually attempt to do this intentionally. Because we always just talk about this stuff, but we never really think about what the hell we're saying. But I think that the universe is a very stable place. I think that we wouldn't exist if it weren't stable. If my heart and my chest was interdimensionally wiggling back and forth, and there wasn't another heart on the other side coming back on my side, then we'd all cease to exist every once in a while, right? You'd lose a brain cell that was real important to being alive, you know? So, it just actually made me think of another CERN thing they could be doing. Don't let me forget. Let's go over to the idea that there is, because this will fold around into CERN really well, but there's another species in another dimension. For all intents and purposes, let's think about them like gray aliens. They're 3.5 to 4 feet tall, very slim beings. The females are about 7 feet tall, 6 to 7 feet tall, and they're beige. Very stoic society, very frail, no thumbs, all that stuff, right? Keep those people in your brain. And they have essentially, you know, maybe they've crossbred so much that that's what their DNA is at the end. At the end, when you breed all of the species in their realm together, that's what they become. And they sort of explore their universe. They have invented hyperspace, interdimensional, what is the infinite improbability drive. So they get anywhere, and they sort of see everything there is to see in their dimension. They can drive into the center of a sun and not have a single molecule inside the cabin go up in heat. And it's this Q continuum sort of thing where they live for a really long time. They have all the books of knowledge about the universe at their beck and call, and they've seen everything. And so now they actually have this need for a new frontier. And so they start to experiment. They build machines to start experimenting with the idea of interdimensional existence, because it's still just a theory. And they use big, large machines to wiggle things out of existence. And at first, the scientists from their realm thought, oh, we just destroyed this. It didn't actually wiggle out of existence. It was obliterated. And someone looks a little closer at the experimental data and goes, no, I don't think it's losing its cohesion. I think it's just fading out of existence. And look at what we're doing to it. We're changing its frequency. We are changing its vibrational frequency from the center out. Because, by the way, the neat thing is that they would typically have to deal with the same fabric of the universe that we're dealing with. Lest they would have to pierce our realm from another, you know, complete universe of different mass, different substrate, right? Sort of like a heaven and hell piercing into this realm. It's made of different stuff, let's just say. Let's stick to our universe for now. But they conduct these experiments. They prove to themselves there's multiple infinite dimensions. And then they try to decide how to process that. So all their great minds get together and they think about the implications of what this means. Now, what I think is interesting is that this is like a sub-digression, but it's very, very important. There's always been this assertion that aliens, especially the Greys, were very stoic, without emotion, devoid of empathy and sympathy. The question is, and we have our ruling class in this world that we need to fucking eradicate, right? But it seems that the further you go up in privilege in this world, the more inexhaustible bank accounts you have, and you can do anything that you want, you tend to become numb. And us down at the bottom, we know what this is like in a very simple experiment. Have you ever eaten at a different place every single day for a couple months? And then at the end of that journey, you absolutely hate all the food. You have enough money in the bank account to eat anywhere you want to in planet Earth, and you can't think of any place you want. You could go 5-star, 1-star, nothing sounds good. And you're just numb. Imagine the ruling class getting to a point where they are numb towards life because they can do anything, go anywhere. No matter how perverted their brains are with what they want to do with someone else's child or someone else's wife, they've done it. Nothing makes it happen. My fear for any type of organic life, especially those that have I think therefore I am life forces. My concern is that we would become a stoic sort of mechanical machine of life, which for me at that point, the purpose of us being alive sort of ceases to exist. If there is a creator, think about this. I've said this a couple times in episodes, but let's say it again right here. The deal I made with my creator is I said, look, you don't need another trivial human being to be born, to live, and to die. You don't. So I have to accomplish something in my lifetime that is impressive to you. And God's seen everything, so it really is a kind of a foolish statement. But in the end, it gives me more of a push to find something special in myself, relative to my capabilities. My God goes, wow, that was really hard to do in that body and that brain. I made you this immature kid who smokes cigars in the fucking patio and makes videos, and you actually pulled off something neat, right? So that's my goal in life, right? But imagine I am one of these great aliens, and I'm this super-duper society. I've been around for millions and millions, if not billions of years. We're just really lucky. There's no predators. There's no meteorites that hit our planet. We just get along. We just got along, or we traversed the ignorance of war very early. And now I'm just sort of a Q continuum sitting around, bored out of my mind. Here comes this interdimensional thing. Now, I'm hoping that any alien that would travel between dimensions has a bit of a fabric of, I can't say humanity, but a fabric of appreciation for life. But they would have to make a decision of what it means to travel between dimensions. Maybe they could send a few scientists. Maybe that's what this Roswell crash was. All UFOs that we see, they're simply probes or individuals inside probes to come and take a look at what it means, to see what the threat is. Christ, could you imagine them seeing our sci-fi movies where we're absolutely terrified of aliens? Can you imagine if just occurred to me, what if the ruling class knew that these aliens wanted to come to us peacefully and give us all kinds of great things? And so what they've done is they've greenlit a bunch of hocus-pocus stuff about aliens, making us hate them, making us fear them, such that when they come and they do their little probe, the little reconnaissance mission, they see that we are still terrified, we're still ignorant of aliens. And so they never drop off, because if they did come, the ruling class would lose all their power. So the only thing we need to do to actually make them land is to prove to them that the folks that make those films are an isolated, opportunist group trying to make a profit from some dopamine and adrenaline shifts in our minds, right? So anyway, they start to look at this problem, and they start to say, well, geez, there seems to be a lot of frontier in communicating with these individuals to learn about them. Now, the other thing we'd have to worry about if they were very stoic, I don't mean obsess on this, but it's sort of a Borg approach. Now, if these beings exist, we have to assume that their frailness is a reality to some effect, or they have a prime directive, because they haven't dropped in yet and said, what's yours is mine. I'm taking this away. As much as there's Planet X stories and no force for flat Earth things, they're not here. They're not killing us. There's no history of that happening. So I think we're pretty safe. But they would contemplate what it meant to open up a dimension, because the conversation goes both ways all of a sudden. Now, if we're seeing UFOs and aliens due to interdimensional penetration of our universe, the thing is we don't actually know whether or not they're coming in from another dimension. It appears as if they're coming from another planet in a spaceship. Okay. That's a little more comforting, because then it's like, go back home to your place. This is our place. You can live in the bottom of our oceans, as Bill Cooper said. But the second, and you know, imagine CERN being part of this program. A second that our scientists could prove through observation, better video, you know, a bunch of military equipment all over the world, you know, a bunch of submarines and ships, battleships and radar everywhere and satellites. Let's just say they could see the interdimensional penetration into our universe, the place where there's a time rift that opens up and a ship comes through it, or four or five come through, and they barrel down into the Pacific Ocean or Atlantic Ocean or wherever, and our scientists go, holy shit, it looks like they're interdimensional. And so we develop new technology to kind of watch the same areas that are very consistently, you know, spawning these vehicles, and we start to watch. Maybe we start to monitor frequencies to see if is it a frequency shift, or is this what a hyperspace ship looks like when you move from one point to the other without traveling the distance in between? Are we giving ourselves this false indication that this is an interdimensional thing? But somehow we confirm it. We confirm that this is an interdimensional relationship between them and us. Well, guess what? We're pretty smart too, right? And curiosity is all we ever need to develop different hypotheses, to build different inventions to go the other way. So all these organizations from all these different countries eventually calmed down, and they share the information, and they all came to the same conclusion. We have an interdimensional species that continually visits our planet, and we better get up to snuff on our technology such that we can stop them by disrupting their ability to get here, or at a minimum, get to them. Oh, and one of their spaceships crashed in New Mexico in 1947, along with another half dozen to a dozen all over the world. And let's look inside their ships. Let's see what's going on. Let's try to understand their antimatter propulsion systems so that we can build ships to go the other way. But let's build a gigantic collider to try and figure out the nature of mass, which is the nature of energy, such that we can have 100% command over our domain, such that we can tell these people, you can't just crash the party. You're going to have to get an invite. And if you want an invite, you got to knock on the door and talk to us. Now, there's all kinds of theories about how they already have made contact with us and that kind of thing. Maybe. You know, there's just so many fanciful stories. They're told by one guy, you know, with no cooperation. And unfortunately, it could be the way it actually happens. So we can't completely poo-poo anybody. If we're not there, we don't know. But remember, as D.M. Murdoch said, outrageous claims require outrageous proof. Now, it could be that they would travel to us because they're so myopic, because they're so stoic, because they don't have any emotions about anything. It's just a mathematical equation to them. They come to us and they don't think about the ramifications. Now, there's no indication, honestly, that that's it. Because they would land, right? They would land at the Super Bowl halftime. Could you imagine that? No, they make a really interesting landing at the Super Bowl halftime. And nobody knows whether or not it's Katy Perry's, you know, latest Masonic worshiping. It's going to be interesting to see how she goes out, because they're going to sacrifice that chick. It's going to be wild. She'll have some horrific demise, I'm sure. But now let's think about the nature of frequencies for 1 second to see sort of into the universe when it comes to an interdimensional existence. Now, we've all sort of had these thoughts, but then we sort of haven't had them all at the same time. So what I'm going to try to incubate in you is to see this whole thing at the same time. For those of you who are avid Star Trek fans, one of the most intriguing little props in the series from the very beginning, in the 60s, 67 and up, was the three-dimensional chess game. It has a name, I can't remember, but you have three planes of existence, and the game is played in this 3D manner, which I think is utterly brilliant. It's a great cognitive education for your brain as well, to see that and try to discern, oh my God, yeah, you're going to have to see the game in three dimensions. And a knight could move, technically speaking, I would assume, from the bottom to the top, just traversing, you know, this three-dimensional thing. I don't know what the rules would be. But now, we know that frequencies typically go in shapes. And if any of you have dealt with sound waves, I took sound wave courses in high school. I took, you know, I've been a musician for a long time, dealt with synthesizers, and there's all kinds of different waves that make different sounds. And so you have a sawtooth wave, a square wave, a nice sine cosine wave. And we would have to sort of think about the fact that what would be the organic nature of this infinitely divisible universe? I think it would be every tiny little alteration from your current point of existence is happening right next to, or really on top of, the one that you're in. So the words that I'm picking to speak with you, every possible word and every deviation of phraseology, my hand gestures, whatever, right? Literally the wind blowing my follicles in my hair, every single different thing that could possibly happen is happening. I'm just in this one. And so the reason why I mention that is that in order to change frequencies, to take a whole being of sentient thought and move it into another dimension, you, at a minimum, would be sort of like a transporter, right? You have to take all the molecules in my body. Provided the soul could hang on to the mortal coil, if the coil went off to a different frequency. And you'd have to shift me. And it's going to take energy to cancel out energy and change energy, right? So if you wanted to move just a little bit over, like the minimum amount over, it would take the minimum unit of energy to do so, whatever that is. Right, a gigawatt to build a flux capacitor at some point, I'm sure. But now let's just say you want to move to a totally different XYZ in the universe. You want to really, you know, you want to go from being long hair to short hair. You want to go from being, you know, a 6 foot creature to a 7 foot creature, or something really drastic. The amount of energy, I would assume, to move your dial on the FM frequency dial to this drastic change, I think would be damn near infinite. It would be a lot, it would be exponentially larger than the energy to go to the next possible socket over. But now let me ask you, would you notice a tiny shift? Talking about the organic nature of the universe, would you notice a tiny, tiny shift and change? Oh, I just switched just now. And the word, the phraseology I was going to use a second ago to express the same exact thought just changed. I'm using different words. I think I wouldn't notice. I think I wouldn't notice a tiny change. Now think about it. If you can't notice a change because it is so infinitesimally subtle, maybe there is an organic flux to whatever frequency that we're in. You know, when energy collides with itself, it changes its momentum, it changes its velocity, it changes its vector. So maybe merely existing puts you in this ecosystem of a little bit of flux. And maybe there are, you know, pockets of change that are organically stronger than other pockets, right? You ever flown in a plane, you hit an air pocket and you fall. Well, there was this deprivation of pressure in the atmosphere that causes the plane to lose its lift, because there's no oxygen there to create lift on the wing.
And you fall.
All right. What if the inverse is happening in our world? A pocket of energy comes by. Through some reaction to something else, maybe a star blew up somewhere or whatever. Someone just had a really good bowel movement somewhere, and it just changes the neighborhood for a split second. I'm sure that actually takes place. It took place when I was a child, probably. But then we have the Mandela effect. All of a sudden becomes sort of just an organic property of the universe. Now, the interesting thing about the Mandela effect is that you have pockets of existence that have disciplines. Like, I was never raised with the Berenstain or Berenstain Bears. I saw them, just wasn't my gig. You know, I was going on 30 when I was probably about 4. And it just, being a child was just, ugh. I felt like a child. I felt like I was trapped in a daycare center at 30. It was horrible. But anyway, for some people, it's that. For me, it was Eli Whitney. And I think with Eli Whitney, the only thing I could say is my teachers could have had it completely wrong. But there is a romantic story about Eli Whitney that is very deep. It's not just, oh, he's white. No, the whole irony of him being a slave and making the cotton gin, getting rid of his own industry, getting rid of his own slavery through invention when he had no education. The whole thing was propped up, you know, but it could have been some sensationalized Black History Month thing that white people carried around and just didn't know any better. But what if this is just an organic flux in the universe? And we're more interdimensional on a daily basis than we can possibly imagine. I think that premonitions are very real, and I think they're very organic. I think they're extremely organic. Now, if you haven't watched all my episodes, let me give you the analogy of how this works. And once you understand what I'm about to tell you, you're going to have a little parlor trick for your family. And if you like saying neat things in front of your family, you're going to love this one. I've never heard it taught anywhere. I came up with this myself. It's very simple. You get the best way to do this is get a napkin. And, you know, if you're at a restaurant, paper napkin's the best. White, obviously, is the best. But you could do it with a piece of cloth, too. But you need it to be lighter so you can conduct this experiment. And you get a colored substance. If you're in a kitchen, it's amazing. You get some red dye of some sort. It could be the cola you're drinking, right? The more pronounced the dye is, the better this experiment goes. But you fold the napkin in half in two directions. So you have a plus sign in the center of the napkin. So you know what the exact center is, right? Just pretend like you're folding a paper plane, then undo it. And drop some colored dye in the very center of the napkin, creating a little spot. And so you know what's going to happen in the center. It's going to be darker, and around the, it's going to spread out because of moisture. It's going to absorb into the napkin or the cloth or whatever, and it's going to stop at some point. There's going to be a round halo around that center point. Now, the center point represents an event in time. Let's say like a 9/11, because I had a premonition the night before. But I think this is very, it's not that you're special necessarily. It's just that you tuned into it. That's all. But now the line that, take one of the lines that goes through the center of the napkin and say, this is the timeline that we're on. Now you're approaching, you're going to move from one side of the napkin to the other side of the napkin through this colored area in the center, this dyed center in the area. Now the event that's happening is going to happen to you because you're going to cross to the epicenter of that napkin. But now what happens if you were actually shrunk down and you're walking on the napkin? And you have no knowledge that this event's coming. You're going to start walking, and what's going to start happening? The ground's going to get wet because that drop has reached, you've reached the event horizon of the event. And you start walking, and then you start noticing this colored dye is on the ground. You're like, oh, this is weird. It keeps getting more dense. And then you recognize what the red dye means to you. It means, oh my God, these are plane parts. You know, or this is whatever. This is something that represents the thing that's about to occur. And when you get to the epicenter, there's the event. But you've had pre-warning as you've walked down the timeline because of transverse waves. You get the pool, the ripple from the center. And you're bumping into it as you go into the center. And once you reach the center, you're like, I knew it. I knew this was coming. Because I saw all the shit before I got to this event. And then after, who knows? Maybe it's a teardrop the other way because there's a lot of effect and change that happens, right? If you were to all of a sudden resonate at the events, reaction-solution formula, right? The you might carry that wave with you as you move forward, and you're affecting the future because you're willing to buy into bullshit. The night before 9/11, I had this feeling. My life was great. I had this feeling things were going to change. I told my girlfriend that night, I feel like something bad's about to happen. And then I looked up at the ceiling and I saw two planes, literally like big giant jumbo jet planes, go left and right. Now, again, I'm not sure they ever were used in the event, but that's the subject matter that was perpetrated. That's how I think premonitions happen. Events are ripples in the pond, sort of the holographic universe theory, and you bump into the transverse waves of that event before they occur. That's it. It's not hocus pocus. And what if you're able to attune yourself to, hope that's the right word, to these frequencies? You're always able to sort of see ahead because you just relax. Nostradamus, who I don't know if he was a real guy, tend to think it's all crap, but the theory of that guy, and well, Philip K. Dick had a sort of a Nostradamus thing. He's a science fiction writer. You know, they talk about rivers of knowledge. And I think that that's how you can see it. By the way, there's something called a Gnostic. And I have to say, without knowing what that word was and knowing what that meant, when I finally had a Gnostic explained to me recently in a video beautifully, I would say I've been a Gnostic my whole life. And a Gnostic is a person that listens to the universe and can feel truth. I know that sounds scary. That sounds stupid. Sounds like, wow, you're going to be the biggest problem in society if you think you can just feel the truth. But what I've always done is I get close to a subject, I do research, and then I just sort of let it float in my mind. So it's not something from scratch necessarily, but, you know, connecting dots after you let things mulch inside your mind. Maybe it's just a subconscious sort of solving problems and your consciousness is catching up, and so you feel like you're having these sort of epiphanies about things. But this could all relate to this sort of interdimensionality of existence. It is more organic than we think, right? But now, let's take that little example of the pond. We know it happens. You throw something in a pond and you can watch the ripples. It's really beautiful at night when you got a moon or something, right? Now, let's think about a 17-mile around disc on the border of Switzerland and France, known as the CERN Hadron Collider. Its technical explanation to the world is that protons are slammed into each other at near the speed of light or at the speed of light, and the collisions create gigantic waves of energy as the energy shatters into its sub-frequencies. A bunch of sensors harvest these frequencies, use a little bit of Sigma algorithms to find out which ones are actually new consistent mass energy units and what's just white noise, what was just in the room before the collision occurred. And they index all of these things and they tell you a bunch of bullshit about a God particle. That was a complete fucking hoax, just so you know. That's because they had 15 billion in the machine and they weren't going to be able to produce results for us. So they made up the God particle thing. I mean, some guy theorized it, but they just made up the frequency they found. But now what if in our localized area of existence, the Hadron Collider is our methodology as scientists, as the smartest scientists on planet Earth coming in from all countries, under the veil of research for the Big Bang, which I don't think any sentient human being with a, you know, some courage and a little bit of logic would ever believe. They are experimenting by throwing rocks into the fabric of the universe with this machine. Because think about it. You accelerate mass. It's pure energy, sort of protons. You accelerate this stuff at the speed of light in a circle that's 17 miles around. I believe that's the distance. Well, if we're a bunch of mass that vibrates at a frequency, and that's how we keep our reality, well, imagine what happens when you create a machine that throws a rock in the center of this system. And you may do a lot of mathematics, and you go, oh, well, it's just so infinitesimally changing. The universe has a lot of inertia. It has a lot of entropy, and it will not allow us to change the weather of the universe. But these little ripples do happen, and they have to get swallowed up by, you know, the fabric of reality that we're in. And let's just face it, sociopathic scientists, meaning people who have been tortured since they were born because they don't look the same or they don't like the same things as what, you know, the national rags say they should, they don't give a shit if the world burns. They do not care. In fact, I would say a lot of them actually thrive on the concept of the universe burning, of just it not existing. You know, there's some of them just would just love to be the right hand of Cthulhu and just pull a trigger and the whole thing doesn't exist anymore. Guarantee. There's more than 100 scientists who work on CERN that have that feeling towards the universe. Whether they admit it or not is immaterial. You know, the Mandela effect was rumored to have existed when Mandela died in our universe in 2013. The Hadron Collider hit its absolute peak of acceleration in its first iteration of design in 2010. So 3 years of throwing rocks into the pond to go along with that metaphor. I'm not saying that's exactly what they're doing, but they're playing with frequencies, man. They're playing with energy. And when those collisions occur, you know, the residual effects, when you see them with the naked eye and you simply say, well, the collision only, it's so infinitesimal, you know, by the time that our collision pads sense, you know, this differential sigma equation to find all the mass, it's just right there. It's just a ball that's inside this thing. It doesn't have the ability to affect mass even at the surface of the Earth. They don't know that that's true. They've never made a claim to that effect, but they also don't like to get into conversations about this. But they also have rituals on site, tons of them, worshiping the god of destruction. I'm telling you, man. Telling you. I don't trust them. I don't sit around losing sleep over it. You know, for me, just to kind of give you a perspective, for me, I'm my soul. That's who I am. If they blow up the universe and my body ceases to exist, well, whatever. They're going to have to answer to a higher being, maybe, about what they did. If nothing else, that there's no God, but there's a bunch of us, and all of a sudden we're floating in space, and everyone's like, what the fuck just happened, you know? And it's like, oh, those assholes right there just blew up the fucking world, blew up the universe. Maybe we can kick some spirit ass, I don't know. I will attempt to do so, just so you know. So the Mandela effect thing, as related to CERN, as related to interdimensional realities, and this just basic conversation of frequency, it makes sense to me. It could happen. And so let's take a little digression, because we're almost done here. Maybe I'll do a little moon bumper at the end here. What has YouTube done to us in the last couple years? You know, I am familiar with the 2008 paper on cognitive infiltration, but let's forget about PSYOP. Let's forget about shilly people and all that bullshit. Apparently, the way to get yourself a certified PhD in brilliance is to call people shills. Jed Skeptic, good friend of mine, he made a great mention in a recent video that cognitive dissonance is something that none of us knew until we watched a YouTube video, and he's 100% correct. He's 100% correct, and I'm going to tell you that we didn't know what shills were, I think, in 99.9% of society because of the same reason. Like, we learned about what shills were because of the YouTube, and as we get angry and we get, you know, we feel uncertainty about the universe, you know, we're trying to put labels on people to sort of cut down on the chaos, because everything's coming at us from all these different angles, and we are trying to cut down on the chaos. So marking people shills in your brain because you can't understand how they talk and you can't understand what they're thinking, you know, that, and that's just some of the cases. Now, some people really feel like shills. I mean, they really, really do. They seem to have infinite time and infinite money to do incredible productions, you know, like their YouTube videos. If you took them to Hollywood to an effects house and you said, make this video, how much is it going to cost? And you get back, I'm going to tell you, you know, I mentioned one of them wrong. It was Black Pigeon, not Black Penguin. I got that wrong. I apologize. this guy, he may be an artist, which is why he's able to make his videos look amazing. But, I mean, if I were to take it into an effects house, we're talking, without question, probably $15,000 to $50,000 an episode to get artists to sit there and use After Effects and Photoshop and Final Cut and or whatever, Premiere, and do all the amazing things that he does. So he must be just natively doing that for a living. But if he's not, then he's rich or something, because those things are intense. They're beautiful, right? Me, I got a video track and an audio track. I sync them together. I got my filter saved in my Final Cut. All I do is I cut out the pauses and the drags on the cigar. I've built my... It took me 4 weeks to build the intro, to figure out what to build. And the outro is just a piece of crap. So there's nothing, you know, there's no big production value on my thing. I work really hard to be smart here, to use a little bit of time I have to make something happen. But in YouTube, you know, over the last couple of years, and for some of you, it's been going on for all kinds of years. And I can say, you know, I woke up again in 2003, really jumped in 2004 or 5, somewhere in there. And I was just 12 hours a day. I was programming and watching stuff and ingesting things. And it just took me so long to come up with just a cognitive vision of what the hell's going on of any level, who's responsible, what's important, all that stuff, right? But now imagine, and this is what's going to be kind of funny, the irony of the whole thing of trying to calm the chaos, call everyone shills, or whatever you got to do to cut out the people that seem to be more chatter and white noise than real substance. What if the universe is entirely different than what we think it is on almost every single level? And on one conceptual level, you can go, well, yeah, of course that's the way it is. But even at our level of existence, it is very different. You know, perhaps, I mean, imagine this. Okay, so there's something I've been talking about with my friends. I want to shove this in your eye, in your ear, in your eyes. I think that Stanley Kubrick undoubtedly confessed to the moon missions about 16, 17 years ago that they knew that this video was coming and it was going to be conclusive. They worked very hard, to cut it up in a way to make it look insane instead of having a nice continuous shot. They greenlight a shitty movie called Moonwalker to release at the exact same time that this footage is going to release. They released it right underneath our nose. No one's paying attention to it. It is the confession of Stanley Kubrick. Again, I studied the geometry of his face. I studied the mole pattern on his face, the growth pattern of moles over the course of a man who was 70 years old, starting from a little tick on his cheek 30 years earlier to a big giant mole, you know, 30 years later than that. I think it's him. I studied his voice patterns in the making of The Shining. There's all these claims that someone claimed it was a fake thing. No, they didn't. They didn't. No one's claimed this thing besides the guy that put it out on the internet. The idea that Kubrick's wife denied it never happened. It never happened. They said it was a viral video for the Moonwalker movie. That's not true. All that's bullshit. This dude confessed and said, hang on to this for no less than 15 years. It was actually released 16 years later. And there it is. And again, it's not a big bunch of butthurt for a Gen Xer or below. It's not. The Gen Yers don't care. The Gen Zs absolutely don't care. So it's only a big butthurt thing for people that are still liable for it and the baby boomers who have a bunch of false patriotism due to the idea. I started looking at the lunar lander the other day and just thinking about where they would have hidden the gas tank to fuel a 10,000-pound thrust engine. And then you go watch the documentary on Netflix about the Russian engine program, which I don't want to abuse the name, but it's up there right now as of September 2016. It's a beautiful 50-minute documentary about the Russians basically creating boosters that are way better than ours. It's the NK-33 and I think the RB-180 or something like that. But there's no room for a fuel tank and astronauts in that tiny fucking thing. It's just so funny how stupid we were back in those days. But anyway, here's my point. They have debuted a formula in December of 2015 of how to release the exact footage of the proof from Stanley Kubrick that he helped film the Apollo 11 mission and the Apollo 13 mission. That's the only two he was involved in. And they made us all think it was a scam. Brilliant. Brilliant. 99% of everyone thinks that that's a scam, if you even know it exists at all. All right. Well, we know this paper was written, or theorized to be written, in 2008 to pull us off of the real important topics about economics, policy around the world, and the elite, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I believe that. But now, what if you figured out a formula to say, well, all the truth is going to leak out? You're at the intelligence level, agency level, and you're like, holy shit, everything's leaking out, man. We can't stop the sieve. So we better figure out a way to wrangle and ride the rodeo of truth coming out in a way that we can make people divided on it, ridiculed for knowing the truth. We'll have the Army Corps of PSYOPs out there, you know, essentially trying to keep reality from people. We'll write software that pretends to be human beings online to say idiotic things. So we have a bunch of theories out there that are pretty outrageous. Some are, I think, created simply to create something that is definitively idiotic and makes no scientific sense whatsoever, such that it will stick to the ones that actually have a little bit of backing. Now, again, you know, there was a time when... And I wish I had bumpered all my videos with whatever you're seeing at this point in time is what I am currently thinking about at this point in time, and it is not what I necessarily believe the day that you're watching it. I wish I'd had the wherewithal to do something like that. I would say that there was a time when I probably crossed the 51% mark on the flat earth theory, and now it's gone back the other way. But it's not completely gone. And as I watched Kubrick Confessions get shot down in people's minds because of a bunch of random associations, I'm thinking, wow, they figured out a way to debut all the weirdness about the reality that we're in and associate it with so many chaotic things and chaotic variables that you won't believe it. But what if it's true? What if it's true? What if anything that you're considering right now that is crazy or things that you're dismissing are actually true, but they're simply associating it with things in such a way, in such a pattern, that it just, you know, it's step one, associate it with that. It's like almost like a Kubler-Ross technique of getting you to dismiss what is your real reality, right? It's a long way of saying that, but I think that might actually be occurring. And we don't know. We don't know because there's such a cloudy world. Let's just take another analogy real quick. Just so you, when you have to explain this to someone, maybe this will help. You have the European Union, which is a complete disaster. Italy's about to go tits up and become the next Greece and Cyprus. All the big banks of Europe are completely bankrupt. Germany's bankrupt. Spain's bankrupt. France is bankrupt because they've been taking on all this debt from other folks. And what's really occurring is that we're understanding the cabal of the EU. We're understanding the treasonistic, systemic roots of Merkel in Germany. She's a communist, socialist sympathizer from her childhood. Okay, so right now, we're probably pretty focused on what's really going on in Europe. But now think about it. They are looking at us going, shit, everyone's waking up. They're up to our new world order thing with these crappy currency called the euro and this whole stupid idea of redistribution of wealth. They're even hip to the fact that the population, the sperm count in white males in Europe is almost non-existent now. So they're just becoming extinct. But they're also becoming more upset about this. Scotland watched its removal from the UK control, the British control, get thrown as a vote, you know. So everyone's really, 2-3 years ago, totally on target. So what starts happening? George Soros, as an agent for these bankers, starts to fund the fake Syrian invasion of Europe, putting all these militant males with Sharia law directly into Europe. Oh, but they're not, you know, they're causing unbelievable havoc in Europe. The idea that anyone would come to Orange County, California and sequester a street, it would take about a weekend before their bodies would simply not exist on this planet anymore. All right. But this shit's happening all over Europe. It blows my mind. Well, you disarmed a bunch of Europe. Guess it's pretty easy to do that, right? And they've been sold this elitism bullshit about being more intellectual than the rest of the world in doing so. But now they have all these supercells all over. I don't know if that's the right term, but these cells all over Europe ready to pull the trigger. And what happened? It took the eyes off of the real issues. And there's sort of a critical mass to create a gigantic Arab war in Europe, in the EU states, right? So they're smuggling them in, smuggling them in. Hillary Clinton wants to smuggle shit tons in America. And these aren't, again, they're not trying to speak your language. They're not trying to adapt to your people. They're raping your daughters, beating your wives in the face. And the government simply looks the other way, doesn't investigate anything, and passes laws against you in your own country to be sensitive to these folks, right? And I honestly don't think that there's a gigantic supply of these individuals that really are that barbaric. You might think different. I'm not quite sure. I don't think it takes much, right? But okay. So they're setting up Europe such that they can pull the trigger anytime they want. If Europe ever starts to wake up and try to arrest bankers, you know, Ireland's doing it. Iceland's already done it. If you guys just rose up and said, you know what? It's really simple. We know where these fuckers live. Let's just go drag them out of their houses. Yeah, some of us will die, but you know what? In the end, my child will live a sovereign, free life and know what liberty means, man. Freedom from government, right? Let's say that that starts happening, and they just make a phone call, and they go, green light the whole thing, let's go. And all these cells, well-armed, militant males, create a massacre that dwarfs anything in recent history. Just arbitrarily killing and raping and doing everything. And more, you know, once the war started, you lose complete cohesion of any of the borders, and they can just rush in, and it's just an absolute brawl in Europe. And because Hillary Clinton is going to smuggle a bunch over here, it starts happening here as well. Can't even believe it, right? I know this is an episode about interdimensional life, but I just want to throw this out there because it's just a little, B-side bumper on the end of this thing. That is an advanced sentient version of this interdimensional messing and mucking around. One is organic and natural to the universe, perhaps, and the other one is instigated. But now think about this. We've talked about mind control on the episode. A lot of you have done a lot of research on it. What is a mind? Well, it's an instance of thought between your body and your soul. It's just like the short-term flash memory in your computer. Your hard drive is a long-term memory, and your flash memory is the thought you're having at that point. It's what your computer's thinking about that moment. The instructions that keep your computer going, right? Okay. Now, what if they could get inside your brain and change your mind by altering the frequency in your head? We talk about cell phone towers doing this. Satellites can do it. We just know they can. It's just a frequency. You broadcast it at your brain. This energy hits your skull and you can't have a certain thought, or you're having a different thought. Maybe you're in love. Maybe you're terrified. Whatever they want you to feel. I'm willing to bet during a presidential debate in America tomorrow and the next few days, if that exists, it's going to be on high. When Donald Trump talks, they're going to put out fear frequencies. And when Hillary Clinton talks, they're going to put out warm, fuzzy frequencies. Can you imagine if it was just that easy? But what if, this is ridiculous speculation, I admit, but what if CERN is able to eventually figure out, I doubt they have this power today, but what if they were to eventually, in 50 years or so, figure out how to erase the existence of frequencies? And so you can't have certain thoughts anymore. All you can have are the ones that they put out there. History that reveals things. You know, the Library of Alexander, is burned down to hide the religions of the past. So whatever is here now is all you know. Didn't really work, but it worked really well for a few hundred years, if not a thousand years, right? But if there's a CERN that could do that, that burns the books of consciousness, burns the books of reality, such that it didn't exist. And a few of us that remember it through what we might call a Mandela effect, well, we're going to die in the next 50 to 100 years, and so it's not there anymore. Problem solved. They engineer reality through a machine, using the principles of interdimensional manipulation of frequencies, moving us and moving them into a frequency where they are superior. the variables that disrupt their reality simply don't exist in the equations anymore. You know, you look at the equation, it's x plus y equals z, y disappears, and then x equals z. I'm debating saying anything about the moon here because it would be super duper off topic. Let's just do it. Let's just do it because I don't think I can do a whole episode on it. This would be, again, like the hidden track on those on your album back in the day, or the hidden track in your MP3. So funny. Hidden tracks were so much fun when we were young. For those of you who don't remember, you know, an album would go sort of static for a little while, and then all of a sudden the song would come on, or you had a CD, which, you know, you just put it in. You couldn't see the tracks on the CD, so you didn't know it was in there. And if you just let, like, Rob Zombie in one of his, I think it's Astro 2000 or 3000 album, I can't remember the name of it, but he had this hidden track. It was just an amazing, beautiful track. But I think it was like 9 minutes of silence before the track comes on. I used to put my daughter to sleep to that track. Sounds strange, but it worked. Sort of Arabic, kind of grindy metal thing. It was really cool. But anyway, this will be your hidden track. The moon. Now, let's just say you're disputing in your own brain. Forget everyone else. Screw everybody else when it comes to your brain. It's your brain. You think for yourself, right? Flat Earth versus round Earth. And, you know, the assertions are wildly different, right? We have an organic heliocentric universe whereby we are an infinite dot on an infinite dot, infinitely small, infinitely significant in the global scheme of the universe. And then you have the firmament idea that we're in a petri dish of some sort, whether it be built by aliens or by God himself. There's a firmament of water over us. All of a sudden, we're very significant and we're at the center of someone's consciousness on an intense level. Of course, I would suggest that you don't spite any creator's ability to focus on us, regardless of what size we are relative to the rest of the universe. Okay. Here's something that's very interesting. Here's something that I believe reveals some intelligent design that is sort of hard to shake. And because we cannot explain it scientifically, because it seems to counteract science and astronomy, it's fascinating, and that is the very placement and the size of the moon. The size of the moon is a shape, and it's too big for our planet, for one thing. As we look at all the other planets in the universe, in our solar system, all the moons are very small compared to the actual planet that they orbit, and it has to do with the relationship of gravity being able to hang on to such a giant object. Now, if you study Eric Dollard and listen to my other episodes, it is believed that the sun is hollow, all planets are hollow, all moons are hollow, and so even though it has a certain size, it doesn't necessarily represent a gravitational density of its size because it has a plasma ball in the center. And this is an ecosystem of electricity, which for me is just conclusive. I have no other belief if I think about heliocentric being true. But we have this moon that when it crosses in front of our sun is miraculously exactly the same size as our sun, perspective to us. Now, the sun is supposed to be 93 million miles away. And when the moon, which is approximately 236,000 miles away in an elliptical orbit, it's not in a solid orbit, meaning it doesn't have an equal distance from Earth the entire time. But regardless of that little thing they tell you, eclipses are always perfect, right? They're always perfect. We never have an eclipse where the moon completely blocks out the sun, where it won't do the crescent halo, the big ring, the diamond ring illusion that happens. And we don't have it such that it doesn't completely block the sun when they're lined up on each other, right? There's always partial eclipses, so I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about when they both line up, their center points between their diameters, vertical and horizontal, when they're lined up, they're always exactly the same size to us in the sky. With an elliptical orbit, that shouldn't be possible. It shouldn't. But the idea that this thing is way too big for us, but it's perfectly situated to block the sun, is sort of weird. It's as if that's been done to give us some cycle. Now, when I was in astronomy, they said that if you were to stand in the same place in your backyard with a decent view of the night sky, every 4 years you would see a lunar eclipse where you're standing. And every 27 years, you would see a solar eclipse. That's how rare solars are versus lunars. Lunars, when the sun's behind us, and the shadow of the Earth projects onto the or blocks light that would normally hit the moon. So you see the crescent of Earth on the moon's surface. Pretty round stuff that we're seeing there. But the other very odd thing that they tell you about the moon is that its orbit is deteriorating in the opposite polarity than every other object in the universe that has a deteriorating orbit. The way that you're first taught about orbits deteriorating, especially when it comes to satellites, when it comes to space stations, rockets up there, they always tell you that eventually those objects will fall back to Earth because there is a constant drag of very weak gravity towards the center of the Earth. Even the ethereal description of gravity accounts for this, right? Even the air pressure system model in Flat Earth and inside of a firmament accounts for this a little bit. I think in Flat Earth, there's a threshold where you get up high enough where they, just like when you're in the ocean, you float for the first 40 feet. But when you go below 40 feet or so, you can start getting to the point where you start getting pushed to the bottom of the ocean. But you float for the first part due to your displacement of the water and your buoyancy, the air molecules inside you. But eventually you get enough water over you and you get pushed down, right? But our moon is supposedly going further and further away from the Earth. Mechanically, that makes no sense. In physics, it makes no sense. In astronomy, it makes no sense. In order for that to occur, it would suggest that the moon is somehow gaining velocity. Even on an infinitesimal level, it has some force expressed on it that is actually giving it the ability to get further and further away from the Earth. Even when we put, you know, like again, let's just go with their theories. Juno satellite around Jupiter, which is the most laughable thing you've ever seen in your life once you start seeing the footage. But it's supposedly in this slingshotty oval orbit around Jupiter, and it continually gets more concentric and more close to the surface of Jupiter, getting better and better pictures until it falls into the atmosphere of Jupiter in a blaze of glory. So again, every time we ever see this, it's always a deteriorating orbit that gets closer to its original body that is orbiting. There are physicists around the world and astronomers around the world who've written books about who built the moon, who put it there. They have all kinds of crazy theories about it being a space station, you know, almost like the funny thing about the Truman Show. If we were actually in a firmament, can you imagine the Truman Show being sort of the inside joke that, you know, Ed Harris is the producer, director of the Truman Show. He's up inside the moon, and that's his little office that's up there. And imagine if, again, let's just go with the fun fictional notions. And I shouldn't belittle anything, because what the hell do I know about reality? But what if the moon did have something on it, a space station on the base, or like, John Lear thinks. John Lear apparently can see the scriptures of the Bible and sand particles on them on the beach, but what if it is some monitoring station? It's put there so that they can watch what happens to us. Who knows, right? But this idea that they could take all these theories and put them out and they contradict each other, but we swallow it simply because we want to know the truth to stabilize the chaos in our minds. It's very interesting, right? Interdimensional life. If it exists, it could be very literal, that they move between dimensions. If things move between dimensions organically, alien races with advanced technology could move through dimensions and visit us. They apparently haven't thought it was a good time to say hello to the masses, right? But the other thing I'll say right at the very end here is that there are very good ideas that, you know, our visual cortex, again, we use 1/10 of our visual cortex. The cellular tissue dedicated to translating energy into sight has been hobbled by 90% with an organic blocker in our visual cortex. That's fact. Okay. What would happen if we were to unravel the genetic blocker and see perhaps what we're not seeing, process the energy on a heavier scale? Right, you process data, you filter, you can see more things. Now, what if there's an interdimensional relationship where there are beings walking around us right now? They can see us, but we can't see them. I think it'd be really weird to have to constantly move around us, but we can't see them. Now, we don't really feel any touchy-feely things. Some people think they feel the ghosts of their relatives, and maybe that's true too. there's always this weird floating story with anyone who has a near-death experience. So it appears as if we ascend away from our bodies regardless, right? But it could be that there's a different relationship about the interdimensional existence that's like that. There's not much to say about it besides that we could be living among others. There seems to be this interesting thing. God damn, I'm just going to keep going on this episode. Hope this is interesting for you guys. The amount of people that I know that have seen personally, I've never had this happen to me quite the way that they've seen it, but I have, let's put it this way, I've got probably half a dozen friends of mine that claim to have seen a being at the end of their bed staring over them in the middle of the night, typically silhouetted in dark light, you know, like a shadow. Probably just organically, that's the way I would look if I was standing at the head of your bed. I won't do that, by the way, not without your permission. But they have this, and it's terrifying. And they typically wake up in some form of sleep paralysis where they have the ability to open their eyes and stare at this being, but they don't have the ability to move. They're trying to scream, but they can't do it. I had a girlfriend once who is probably the most emotionally stable human being I've ever known. And she is the only person I've ever dated that woke up with the person at the end of the bed. She said it looked like me, actually, which was interesting. I was in my office. And I heard a scream. Never happened in my whole life. Scream inside my house. I've never heard this woman scream. Who screams, right? Unless you're just on a roller coaster. This was not a scream of joy. This was a scream of fear. And I went to the room real quick. And she said there was a person at the end of my bed. That's it. Half a dozen people I know have had that experience. I have another friend of mine. He recently told me a very, very interesting story. And this is a very grounded person, not someone who's has a history of telling me stories to impress me. But she said that when she was a child, probably, I think somewhere around 8 years old or something like that, her and her mother in bed, the lights on, you know, on the nightstand, so the room's fairly lit. And they both looked up, and there's a gentleman at the end of the bed, lit just as much as he would be lit by light in the room. And he's staring at them, and they both start to freak out as if this person just simply appeared to them. To make matters more interesting, they were able to compare notes right away. Even to this day, they can compare notes because both of them have it burned into their memory of exactly what he looked like. Both of them agreed. He had this face, this hair, this body, this build, these clothes on. And I find that to be far more captivating and interesting, that it's the same exact formula that other people have had, but the only difference was that this individual did it in a lit environment and did it in front of two people to create cooperation between the two folks. I'm going to tell you that I don't know, because it's the mother. I don't know the mother at all, but I know the daughter. She's almost 30 today. I believe her. And believe me, it's not easy for me to say that, but I do. Because people that are full of shit, people who tell those, you know, big tales about, oh, look how special I was, I saw UFOs, they have a lot of other stories as well. And this person doesn't have any other stories of any certainty. I would say not to such a level of certainty that are so vivid and so amazing. But I know some people in Los Angeles, my God, they've got dozens and dozens of these stories. And maybe they're telling me the truth as well, but it's certainly a lot harder to digest when someone seems to have a propensity of amazing things. So there's that too, that maybe we do live in a sort of homogenized thing. But I would say as you ingest information, let me just close with this exact phrase here, right? I think that we have failed to recognize that a lot of things in life are quick. We used to have to go to the grocery store, buy our food, come home, and cook. It took a little while. Every time we made dinner, it took half an hour to an hour, and then the same amount of time to clean up. We no longer do that, right? A lot of us go to fast food places. I am as guilty as anyone, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just what we do now. Problem. If we build up the circuit in our minds to have more than a short attention span, but not really a deep attention span, which is why I love this show. Make my episodes really long so you guys have to listen. It's massaging your, even if you don't believe a damn thing that I say, And I'm not saying you should. You should think through everything. But if you can just listen to me to the very end, you're sort of going to the gym for your brain. If you disagree with me, that's fine. You have thought through your beliefs and you're disagreeing with me. But if you can make it to the last minute when the bumper runs, you've just done yourself a big favor. But here's the thing. What if theories of things like flat earth and all these other outrageous theories require a lot of thought? Maybe with the amount of information that each one of us has as individuals, the path and the amount of time it takes to discern whether or not something is true or false, it may not be able to be discernible in 6 months, 6 days, 6 years. Maybe it's a decade-long thing. Maybe it's a 20-year-long thing. I don't know. None of us know. And all of us are different. We have different faculties and abilities to process information and connect things. Keep that in mind as you accept or reject theories. Maybe, you know, like flat earth for me, right? I went down that path, and again, I've looked at international flights to Asia, to Europe in the last 6 months for my company. And every time I track the flight and I plot it on a flat earth map, God damn it, if it's not just right to the center of the map, maybe it's a coinkadink that's the way that you would travel on a globe. They always tell you it's the shortest distance between two paths, and you're kind of like, eh, an arc is not shorter than a line. Okay, when you're going point A, point B. These are nonstop flights. These aren't flights that junction through cities, through the mandate of the airlines not having direct flights, right? So do yourself a favor and give yourself some time. And when you get to a point where you are questioning heavily, just take that thing off your, out of your CPU, out of your mind. Put it back on the shelf of your subconscious and let it churn. In fact, maybe you don't process it anymore for a while. And you come back and look at it later and you're like, oh my God, that was so silly. Or you go, holy shit, how come I never saw this before? It was right in front of my face, but I never processed it properly. Never made the connection. And by the way, no one else did either, so I had no help. That might give us some mechanisms by which we can build a better methodology to build a better mind. I think that's it. If you made it this far, I'm telling you, thanks for listening. I kind of meandered all over the place. Hopefully it's interesting to you guys. Hopefully it provokes thought in you. That's really the name of the game. Not all these episodes are equal. I am aware of my energy levels when I make these episodes, right? So you'll see that I do sometimes one episode all by itself. I release that, and then sometimes I do double headers where I release two at the same time. I want to give you some metaphysics behind that. I recorded a bunch of episodes in May and June, and I mean a ton. I was waking up every single day and doing at least one episode. Sometimes I was doing two. So those go in the archives. And then I'll move down several weeks or a couple months, and I start making really super interesting ones that I think are gold, and I put them up right away. And I forget about the old episodes, and they sit on my hard drive. You know, it's like a video file and an audio file. So I got these two things I got to sync up, and the nightmare is that the frame rate of audio is different than the frame rate of video, so it's a nightmare. Sometimes I'm stitching. If you ever see my mouth move a little bit slower or faster than the speech, it's because either I didn't notice that was happening, or I just went as close enough. I need to get this episode out the door. But if I have an episode that I think is sort of, it's in 70, 80% score on a 100% score, I'll put that one out, but then I'll put what I believe to be sort of a B-plus to an A-plus episode after that episode, so that the first one you see in the feed is, I think, the superior video. So I just did Awakening in Cashless Society. I think Cashless Society is probably at best a B-minus episode. My energy levels were really low. I don't know what the deal was. I was really tired or something. I don't know. One of the benefits of wearing sunglasses is you can't see how big the bags under my eyes sometimes, right? So that's some of the theory of why that's happening. I've got the archives almost completely dumped out. Where a video is really old, I will put the recorded on this day up there so that you realize, even though it's coming out September, The Awakening, which I think was a much better episode than Cashless Society, which is more recent, it was filmed in May 11th, 6 months ago. And so I'm just putting that up there so you know that if I mention the election, that sort of thing, you kind of have a perspective of it. I did one on tyranny that I had to throw away because I was incorporating my frustrations with some of the candidates running for president, the presidency here in 2016, but they're all gone now. you know, it's down to two people. And it was sort of a bitchy, whiny episode, and I was just a little cantankerous, and so it's not of the quality that I think you guys deserve. So as I surge up and down in these episodes, it's because my supply of videos either doesn't have an A-level episode to sort of counteract the B or C episodes. So that's why. I do get busy from time to time. I'm going to be pretty damn busy in November, so I'm going to be trying to record quite a few that I can kind of prepare and upload. And you know, they're all encoded by the time they release, so the second you hear that they exist, they're in high res, so you can see them on your phones beautifully and all that kind of stuff. That's for those of you who enjoy it. I think that's all I want to say right now. Take care of yourself and someone else. Go to deepthoughtsradio.com, and I'll see you in the next episode. Over now.